Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate that. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge, and we appreciate that very much. Joining us in studio today, Rosemary Trump. Charlie McAllister's out again. You know, Rosemary.
He's on assignment. The judge didn't keep him in jail yesterday, so he was able to go to Chambersburg on assignment.
That ruffian, that machinist, that college professor.
I can't wait to hear this story.
And you know, the really funny thing about this is you go back over the years, how many students has Charlie had as a professor? Y'all, hey, your professor went to jail. I'm just saying, jailed for justice, but that's another story. Speaking of jailed for justice, Rosemary Trump.
Thank you. It's great to be back. Thank you very much.
Always Charles. A pleasure. Yeah. Always a pleasure. And you brought somebody with you.
Yes, Al Turner. Al is a UPMC employee. He was ordered by the judge to be reinstated within a 2-week period to his former job. He was fired for his union activity by trying to organize all the service and maintenance personnel at the UPMC hospital system, and he was a speaker at the rally yesterday prior to our going to court to see what ideally we could work out with the judge in terms of punishment for having committed civil disobedience last June 30th in front of the UPMC headquarters, the huge tall building downtown on Grant Street. There are 28 of us that sat down for justice, for the right to have a union, the right to have a living wage, $15 an hour wage, the right to be able to have our medical needs taken care of. And Al Turner has been one of the leading voices in the hospital on behalf of his coworkers to organize. He's brave, he's courageous, and I'm thrilled that the National Labor Relations Board found that he was fired for his union activism and that he should be reinstated to his job. And we have Al here to talk about his experience of being a worker for UPMC.
Al, first question, brother. Did you get back pay?
The judge ordered back pay, but
you haven't gotten the check yet.
We haven't gotten, you know, he ordered our jobs back also, but, you know, we're not back to work yet.
Okay. Well, hey, you know, if you've been ordered back to work and they haven't made it happen, you still get back pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cha-ching.
It just keeps adding up.
Yeah. Interest, too. Don't forget the interest.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to make them pay. But first of all, thank you very much. Anybody who will sit down in the middle of the street next to Rosemary is a friend of mine, and you are most welcome here. Let me start off with this. You're a union guy. You were working at UPMC. You got fired for your union activities.
Yes.
And that was upheld by the FLRB. Yeah?
Yes. You know, I'm not in a union yet, but, you know, that's what the problem was. You know, we were trying to...
Concerted activity.
Yeah, trying to get a union. Yeah. And they made up charges, you know, to have me discharged.
Yeah. And sometimes those what they accuse you of is really kind of silly, you know.
Yeah.
It's like stealing candy bars or
yeah.
some such. Yeah, I know. I get it. And it's a shame that organizations will allow people to come in and counsel them or to advise them to do these kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, because let's face it, UPMC, they're not a law firm. Their HR department, they're probably not really just geared up for this. They go out and they get that attorney from someplace else, and they come in and say, oh, fire them all. You know, and then what happens is UPMC ends up paying. You know,
yeah.
So that's the tip of the day. Don't hire a union buster attorney. You know, just tip of the day, I'm just saying. But, yeah, they cost you more in the end, not even just their retainer. But so you're waiting to go back to work.
Yes.
When was the rolling issue?
I think it was last Friday.
Last Friday?
The 14th. Back with it.
So you got a couple of days. You'll be coming back in here probably pretty soon. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm glad to go, you know, to be able to go back. I'm glad the judge ruled in our favor because, you know, the four of us that got fired, we, you know, were, it was illegal firings. You know, I just can't wait to go back, you know.
You know, I got to ask you this question. When did it in this country become illegal or the wrong thing to do by standing up for yourself and standing up for your coworkers and trying to improve your life and the life of your kids and your community? When did that become a problem in this country?
When we tried to form a union
at UPMC. Holy gee.
And what's really remarkable about this is, you know, what's really tragic is that here's the National Labor Relations Board, an agency funded by Al, you, me, every person that lives in the United States of America through our tax dollars. They had to issue a 120-page report of all the activities engaged in by UPMC and their effort to deny these workers their human right, their civil right to organize into a union. And to keep this man who supports himself and his loved ones from having a union and having a voice and having a democratic voice on the job and to be able to sit down as an equal with a healthcare system that, again, is funded by primarily over 80% of all the revenue that comes into that healthcare system comes from tax dollars, either Medicare, Medicaid, or commercial insurance that is paid for by public employers, whether it's a federal, state, municipal, city, town, school district, community college, agency, municipality. 80% of the healthcare funding comes from Al, all the other three co-workers that were fired with him, and every one of us who paid tax dollars. And in the meantime, they use this money, our money, to fight the union, to fight his right to exercise his rights under the law, and the National Labor Relations Board has to put out a 3-page order saying Al should get his job back in 2 weeks with full back pay, as well as the other three workers they fired, and that the health system, UPMC, should afford the workers the right to determine whether they want a union in a non-coercive environment.
Right.
And so it's an outrage that UPMC can use our money to deny us our legal rights to organize. And there is a law. We need to enforce that law. And shame on UPMC.
In the meantime, we'll come back and we'll talk about this some more. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Stick around for Jim Hightower.
Everyone from the Obama family in the White House to my little family in Texas will take a deserved pause from the unrelenting intensity of work on Thanksgiving Day. But millions will not get a work pause. Such workers as firefighters, police, and hospital workers must stay on the job, but they're providing essential services for our society. Yet Walmart, Target, Macy's, Radio Shack, and other retailers are also requiring their low-paid workers to report. Why? What's essential about buying gewgaws, gizmos, or garments from these mass marketers of consumer excess that justifies them forcing employees to give up this family day of Thanksgiving? Retail giants already exploit the day after Thanksgiving, which they've dubbed Black Friday, for an orgy of commercialism. Yet that's not enough to satisfy soulless profiteers, so they've moved their Black Friday start back into Thursday, during the family mealtime of Thanksgiving Day itself. Some are even opening their doors at 6 a.m. on Thursday, essentially wiping out this day of family grace for every employee they require to be at work. A mall outside of Buffalo has gone even more extreme, requiring its 200-plus stores to open on Thanksgiving Day or pay a $200 an hour fine. This is what Pope Francis recently condemned as unbridled consumerism. Yet a Walmart PR flack claims to be doing consumers a favor by staying open on a spiritual day to, quote, provide what consumers need. This is Jim Hightower saying, bovine excrement. Walmart has nothing that needs to be bought on a holiday, and any of the stuff it sells can be bought the very next day from Costco, Crate and Barrel, Barnes & Noble, Dillard's, Nordstrom's, Patagonia, and other stores that respect their employees and America's values by closing on Thanksgiving Day.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
It's about the work. Work we're proud of. Work that provides the energy that powers America. Work that means our communities are stronger, better, for our families, our neighbors, for everyone. Just like you, members of the United Mine Workers of America are on the job, every day, working hard. It's what we do, and it makes America a better place. The United Mine Workers of America, working families just like yours.
At risk of losing your home in a foreclosure? We can help. We'll deal with your bank, lower your principal. We'll buy you a pony, give you the ability to fly. We'll let you ride a unicorn. We'll give you a...
If you're facing foreclosure, who should you trust? The Hope Hotline is a free resource connecting you with HUD-approved housing counseling agencies available 24 hours a day who can give you the information and clarity you need. Call the Hope Hotline at 888-995-HOPE. That's 888-995-4673. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Sisters and brothers, are you buried in paperwork? UnionTrack is a software platform that streamlines your administrative work so you can spend less time chasing databases and more time taking care of your members. UnionTrack was created to streamline your day-to-day operations, allowing you to focus on organizing, training, and advocating for working families. More information is available at UnionTrack.com and on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
Green light.
Hey, girl.
School zone.
I'm getting hungry.
Car changing lanes.
You want to meet me for pizza?
Stop sign. Intersection clear.
Yeah.
Street.
Pizza sounds good.
Ball in street?
Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual-compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, as you're getting chewed out by your parents. Why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate that. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. In studio today, Rosemary Trump, former International Vice President of SEIU. Rosemary.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. And, you know, we also have Al Turner. Recent lottery winner. No. a person who just had his case heard by the NLRB and won. And... he's a UPMC employee and a member of SEIU, the union. Whether or not you're paying those, you're family already. You're stuck. So, and we're talking about some of the stuff that's been going on. You've been working for either the. Well, let me put it this way: you've been going to work in that facility for a while.
Yes.
You worked for the contractor for a while.
Yes.
They bought the contractor out. They brought the jobs in. They dropped the wages, didn't they?
No, they raised the wages.
They raised the wages. Hey, well, hey, wait a second. Time out. They did something right. We have to commend them for that.
Yes.
they didn't raise them enough, but that's another story. So we'll give them some kudos for raising the wages when they kept you guys and, you know, went through that. But still, organizing for a union, that's a God-given right in this country.
Yes, it is.
And, I you know, it's like free speech, Second Amendment, 14th Amendment. They're all, you know, they're all our rights. And, you know, we need to stand up for those. And that's what you're doing. You got fired. You got your job back. You're going back. You're getting back pay. Why are you doing this?
You know, at UPMC, we didn't have a voice. You know, they made all the rules, and they even made rules up as they go along. You know, whatever.
Change them as they go.
They suited whatever suited them. That's what, you know.
Yeah, it's good to be king.
Yeah,
it's good to be king. Emperor.
And, you know, they rule with an iron fist, you know.
Yeah, that's the exact kind of thing I want my critical care hospital engaging in.
Yeah.
My children's hospital engaging in. That's the kind of stuff that I want my hospital complex to engage in. Yeah. Just keep them down. Yeah, keep my thumb on them.
That's what they did, you know. You know, they were firing a lot of people, you know, for minor things, you know, before, you know, this is before I even got fired, but, you know, I had a good record, you know, I never missed time. I missed one day and got called in the office for it, and that was when in the beginning. And after that, you know,
you showed up, you did what you were supposed to do, you did a good job, and you went home.
Yes, every day. You know, never was late, always on time, you know, till I decided to, you know, try to get a union. And then I had all these occurrences, and they made up occurrences, and they eventually fired me.
And when you say made up occurrences, what are you talking about?
Well, they said I wasn't punching in or punching out. I don't know which one it was. You know.
Are you saying that you weren't punching in or punching out into the computer system that they control?
Yeah. Oh. The Kronos. They have a clock, you know, time clock called the Kronos. You know, every hospital has had problem with that Kronos, you know, and the day that I got fired, the manager, he was supposed to come up and calibrate the clock. And when they called me to the office, I thought they was calling me in to talk to me about the clock. And they, you know, they called me in and told me I was discharged.
Because of the clock?
Yes.
Because they can't admit that they fired you because of concerted activity, you and at least one more of your friends working to bring in a union.
Well, I was the only one in my department that was, you know, trying to get the union. You know, I had mostly all the my coworkers signed up, but they were all afraid to, you know, because of UPMC, all, you know, threatened everybody. You know, so I was the only one that got fired. You know, because I wouldn't. Every day they would tell me to take off my union button, which said, "Make it our UPMC." You know, we were allowed to. We're all, you know, steal our buttons. I had two different buttons on my hat. They never told me to take them off, but they, you know, that UPMC button, they told me every day, they told me to take it off.
That union button was a biohazard.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, they had me under surveillance. They had they would come and take pictures of me with the button on.
All right.
They had some of my passengers, you know, they weren't all hourly employees. They were some, you know, supervisors, whatever, and they would be taking pictures of me, you know, because I you know, I wore that button every day, you know.
So long and short, the Labor Relations Board found that they fired you Because?
Illegally. It was retaliation.
Because of your union?
Yes.
Yeah. So they violated the law.
Yes.
It's a law on the land. If somebody's trying to form a union in their workplace, they're allowed to do that. Well, free association.
Depends on where you work at.
No, it doesn't depend where you work at. You get if you want to bring in, look, you know.
I'm just saying, you know.
According to them, well, you know, I'll tell you what. It's a good thing that they don't practice law because they ain't getting it right. I hope they're doing a better job practicing medicine. And listen, we got to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll talk some more. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises.
For Workers Independent News, I'm Joanne Powers. Hundreds of thousands of healthcare workers in England and Northern Ireland held a four-hour strike Monday, protesting government refusal to pay a 1% wage increase. The workers have had no pay increase for the last 4 years. Dave Prentice is the General Secretary of Unison, one of the largest of the 11 unions involved in the dispute.
Health workers have been told they do not deserve a 1% increase. This is absolutely crass, it's wrong, and it's meant that our workforces are demoralised. They've been kicked in the teeth by a government that won't even give them a 1% increase, which is in line with the government's own pay policy. It's immoral, it's wrong, and we're standing up for our members.
This is the second strike by NHS workers over the pay dispute, and more actions are planned throughout the upcoming week. UK Trades Union Conference General Secretary Frances O'Grady participated in Monday's actions in support of the health workers.
I think people are really worried that at the root of this, we've got a government that wants to privatise our NHS, wants to ensure that the workers have their morale destroyed, are paid less and less, walk away from the NHS, and we're saying no, enough is enough. People have to live, they have to pay their bills, they've got children to bring up. A 1% increase is in fact a real pay cut, but the government wants workers to put up with an even worse real pay cut, and it's not on.
On Thursday and Friday, Los Angeles and Long Beach port truck drivers, supported by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, ended 8 days of strikes against five employers who have now agreed to meet with union officials. The primary concern of the drivers is their misclassification by employers as independent contractors. International Vice President Fred Potter serves as director of the Teamsters Ports Division.
Most of them, they lease a truck from the employer. They have no independency at all. They can't drive that truck for any other customer. All their terms, conditions of employment, what they get paid, they have no say in. The hours to work, the loads they pull, they pay all the cost of operating the business, all the fuel, all repairs to the truck. The fact of the matter is we have a number of these drivers who work a 50, 60 or more hour week and ended up with a negative paycheck.
At the request of Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, the workers and the companies returned to the table for discussions the Teamsters Justice for Port Truck Drivers campaign characterized as productive. Potter says that as long as their meetings remain productive, the drivers will continue to work.
If those talks break down, we're going to use whatever lawful economic means we can use, including the right to go on strike. I don't like using the word never. It's all about negotiations. And where people are misclassified, we don't feel we have any latitude.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the American Federation of Teachers and its 1.6 million members working to reclaim the promise of public education, health care, and public services for our students, their families, and our communities. More information online at aft.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Hi, I'm Al Roker. Let me tell you what's happening in your neck of the woods. Right now, 1 in 6 Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are our neighbors, friends, our co-workers, but we can do something about it. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find the local food bank in your community. I'm Al Roker, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created aarp.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. Look, folks, I got to say this. After years in the military and years in the civilian workforce, there's one thing that definitely translates out of the military and into any other work environment. You take care of your people, and your people take care of the mission. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. If you have to make a decision, always err on taking care of your people. That's all there is to it. Because if you take care of your people, they're going to take care of you. That's all there is to it. In studio today, we have Rosemary Trump.
Wonderful to be here. Thank
always
you.
A pleasure. Always a pleasure, Rosemary. And Al Turner. Al Turner's with SEIU and also a former and, again, employee of UPMC who recently enjoyed an affirmative ruling from the National Labor Relations Board. Al, welcome back.
Nice to be here.
Al, you were out getting cards signed on behalf of the union.
Yes.
You were out talking to people.
Yes.
You were wearing your union button, your union colors.
Yes.
That's a good thing. I strongly encourage everybody to do that. You were being surveilled. They would come up, and the management would come up and take pictures of you.
Yes.
Were they asking you questions? Why are you wearing that button?
Yes.
Did they ask you about the Steeler button you were wearing?
No. You know, just...
What about the Hooters button?
I didn't have
I don't know if you were wearing a Hooters button, but, you know, I'm just saying, they probably wouldn't ask you about that one either, right?
Probably not.
You might have gotten in trouble with somebody, but, you know, that's another story. So, but they were asking you about your union button.
Yes, every day.
And, you know, was there anything in the handbook, the employee handbook, that says you can't wear a button?
I've never seen anything, you know, but they said there were, you know, if it wasn't approved by them, you know, we couldn't wear it.
Oh, I could have fun with that one all day long.
Right.
I would get boxes of buttons, and I would show up with a box of buttons on my supervisor's desk and say, just turn it over. Which ones can I wear? Which ones can't I? I'll be back tomorrow with another box.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it. This is silliness. You have a right, by law, by constitution, to be a member of a union in this country. You have the right to form a union in your workplace.
Yes.
They fought against that. They fought the law and they lost. Yeah. They fought the law and the law won.
So
imagine
far.
That. So, my hat's off to you for taking the steps that you're taking, going through what you're going through. Obviously, it's important to you. Why is it so important?
Well, you know, because UPMC didn't recognize, you know, seniority, you know, it was always about favoritism, you know, because they had their certain picks that, you know, could get away with doing, things that, like, I couldn't. And they were, you know, they just, they did things, you know, the way they felt was, you know, that satisfied them. Not, they didn't look out for the workers. You know, we weren't, you know, we were less than human to them, to me. That's the way it seemed, you know, because there's so many things that went on there, you know. You know, I don't know if I could speak about them or not, you know. Like, for instance, we had to use a port-a-john in the parking lots, and we, you know, this port-a-john was supposed to be cleaned once a week, and every day, you know, like, it went for like a month without being cleaned.
Why weren't you allowed to use the toilets inside, like?
Because we were all, you know, I was a shuttle driver, and we didn't have time to stop, you know. We were, you know, we had, everything was timed, you know. And we were never, we had a schedule to keep, you know. And, I mean, well, I didn't
mind.
You know,
schedule to keep, that's one thing, but human basic needs, really?
We had one of my coworkers called Board of Health because they wouldn't.
And do we really want that in the parking lot where you're going in and out? And
we weren't the only ones using it. You know, wasn't no patients. It was just work, you know, employees. And then, you know, like, it was sitting out by the entrance, so people off the street would come in and use it too, you know. We found out that the reason why it wasn't being cleaned because UPMC wasn't paying the bill. And as soon as Board of Health got involved, it got cleaned that day.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, okay. You should have called me. Okay, so, all right, so these are the kinds of things that you've been up against. I mean, you're not the only one there.
No.
There's got to be a lot of other people feeling the same way.
Majority of the drivers felt the same way I did, but they just, were afraid to stand up for themselves. You know, they, you know, waited for me to do what they were afraid to do. You know,
That's a lot on your shoulders, Rosemary.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, just using the example that Al gave, there's no reason for that. If there were a union in place, there would be a method in which the concerns of the workers could be expressed.
Right.
And to resolve that issue, because after all, UPMC is a health provider. They're to take care of people, not make people sick,
right,
or endanger their health. That could have been resolved through a grievance procedure, through a discuss meeting, through a health and safety committee meeting. These are standard institutions that develop once there is a organization that represents the workers, so the workers do have a voice. And, you know, the fact that, you know, things got so bad that the workers had to call the Board of Health, again, a governmental agency, to make it known to another governmental agency like UPMC that they're creating a hazardous condition for their employees and, you know, those people off the street. They were under the, you know, same danger of contracting illness or infection as the workers. So the fact is that unions help the employer function. We provide a basic human service need, a human resources need. In fact, I would make the case that if when employers sit down and work with unions on their concerns, whether it's through collective bargaining or meet and discuss or even a grievance procedure, it saves them money in the long run.
Right, right. And I mean, you know, here's the whole conversation in this situation if you would have had a union, okay? You would have gone to your local steward, or your steward would have done this. Go to the first line supervisor. Hey, Bob, porta potty needs empty. Okay, we'll take care of it. I mean, because, and here's the whole trick behind this, okay? That's because you've got two individuals talking to each other on equal footing, okay? Right. That union steward and that first line supervisor, they both have their job to do. They're on equal footing. It's not like, oh, I'm talking down to you or you're an employee. It's equal footing. And that's why those conversations go on. And it's, hey, Bob, porta potty needs emptied. Okay, we'll take care of it. Done. The county isn't getting involved. Lord knows, only knows what that costs. What's that cost the taxpayer? Okay? Mm-hmm. It's not just you. It's the taxpayer too. Yeah. And it's the same thing with, you know, it's the same thing with civil servants. You get a bad supervisor in there, and they're costing the taxpayer money left and right. This kind of thing could have been stopped right at that first line supervisor when the first line supervisor said, hey, yeah, we'll take care of it. Yeah. That's all it takes.
And for proof of discussing this, the largest nursing home chain in America in the 1990s was known as Beverly Enterprises. It's now known as Golden Living. And there was a very, again, adversarial relationship between the unions representing the workers, SEIU. I was the head of the union at that time, as was Tom DeBruin and Neil Bisnow. Same thing. We try to organize workers. They would engage in all these unfair labor practices. We would go to court about them. A lot of money would be spent warring on both sides until finally the National Labor Relations Board ordered them to bargain. And had they not engaged in that, there would have been very severe consequences to the company. The long and the short of it is, once the union was able to sit down and work with that enterprise, that Beverly Enterprises nursing chain, matters got resolved, and it works out that both labor and management are now, several years later, cooperating. And in fact, Neil Bisnow, the president of SEIU, Pennsylvania Healthcare Union, is going to be at community college here at Allegheny County in Pittsburgh on Wednesday, December 10th at 2 o'clock with the chief executive officers of the successor to Beverly Enterprises, now Golden Living Chain, the head of the Human Resources Support Services. His name is Scott Norton. And they're going to be able to talk about the fact that out of conflict, collaboration can occur and that it's a good thing. So I would urge all those UPMC executives and human resource directors, including Mr. John Paul, who evidently is, you know, the chief hatchet person over there in terms of the union, to attend that seminar and find out that unions can be constructive in terms of the work and the development and the success of the operation. And So please, I invite all the listening audience to come to that gathering as well. It's Wednesday, December 10th at 2 o'clock at the Community College of Allegheny County here on the north side. It's going to be at the Forrester Student Service Center Auditorium. And the purpose of this is that negotiations and collaboration and discussion and working together can work on behalf of everyone. Management, the workers, and most importantly, patients.
Absolutely. Guys, we're going to take a short break. Come back. We'll talk some more. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Cullen Lowndes. A two-year investigation by the Republican-led House Intelligence Committee that debunked several right-wing myths about the Benghazi attacks was largely ignored by the four major broadcast networks' Sunday shows. Only NBC's Meet the Press acknowledged the House Intelligence Committee's findings.
House Republican-led Intelligence Committee released a Benghazi report, and it basically, it's pretty exculpatory. The key findings, no intelligence failure prior to the attack. Security at CIA facilities were sufficient. Yes, security at State Department facilities were inadequate, and yes, some of the development of the talking points that Susan Rice used were flawed, but no wrongdoing, none of the conspiracies found. Is it time for Republicans to drop the Benghazi conspiracy theories?
On cable networks, however, CNN's State of the Union provided detailed coverage of the report. Substitute anchor Gloria Borger broke down the report's findings, saying,
"Its conclusions are simple. No conspiracy, no cover-up, and as for the political shenanigans, absolutely not."
For more on this and other stories, please visit BenghaziHoax.com.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, "Dude, that's your ball." So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
You must be your fairy godmother.
Cinderella's dream comes true because the glass slipper fits.
It fits.
In our world, the right fit can be just as important, especially when it comes to car seats. Always choose a car seat that's the right fit for your child's age and size to make sure your little pumpkin gets there safely every time.
Hop in, dear. Thank you.
For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden...
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the five signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
Don't wait. Call 911 immediately.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate that. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. In studio today, Rosemary Trump.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Also joining us today, Al Turner. Al, welcome back. Al, got a question for you. Yeah. How can I give you a pay raise but take it away from you?
By charging us to park, you know, park our cars where we park the buses at, and charge, you know,
And then charge you for parking where I tell you to park at. Yeah. Oh, man, that's insidious. That's insidious. Now, you know, even if they gave you free parking because they rented the whole lot, right?
Right.
They leased the whole lot for the transport vans.
Right.
Now, when you take the transport van, you got to put your car somewhere because you got to drive down to their lot, right?
Right.
Okay. So does it cost them any more to put your car in that spot where you just took the van out of?
No.
Okay. And they own the whole lot. It doesn't matter if they got one car in there, one van, or 100.
Yeah, it's the same, you know.
Same. Rosemary, do you think any of that senior leadership at UPMC is paying parking fees?
I'm sure they're not. And plus, they get a free airplane to ride around in, too.
Yeah, and they've got their own exclusive elevator to get them up to the top of the U.S. Steel building.
Exactly.
So I'm just saying, you know, if they got their own elevator, I'm pretty sure that they're getting free parking. But also, they're getting pretty hefty paychecks.
Well, you know, that's the outrage about all. I asked during the break Al what he's earning an hour, and he said a little over $12 an hour, $12.56 or whatever. Meantime, Jeffrey Romoff, the head CEO, $6.55 million is being paid to him. And here's what it is. Basically, again, the CEO of a hospital, whether it's Romoff or another one, is basically paid to manage government money for healthcare, because most of the money that comes in to UPMC, again, is our money from Medicare, from Medicaid, and from other entities that are public institutions that pay for their employees through a commercial carrier, like UPMC insurance, as an example. And the fact is that if we're going to deal with the inequality of income issues, we really have to start at home and having our congressmen, our state representatives, our governors, our presidents start addressing the inequality income issue where they have control to do this. And the fact that they're paying a poverty wage to Al Turner and all of his co-workers while they can reward executives and managerial officials with, you know, outrageous salaries, that's wrong. That is not the way a country that is built on the premise of a fair day's pay for a fair day's wage and a fair day's work happens. It's not in the tradition of what we normally anticipate happening with our tax dollars. And so my concern is that if Jeffrey Romoff can be paid over $6 million a year and 20-some other executives over million dollars a year, they can pay a living wage. They can pay at minimum $15 an hour for the work that's being accomplished by the workers that deal directly with the patients and the other employees, such as Al Turner here. And so it's time to address this issue. It is our money, and that's the way we have to start looking at it, that tax dollars are really investment dollars by us, the people mm-hmm. in our government, to provide a service for us. And so we may have to change our language, because just as we changed the name of the welfare department recently to the Department of Human Services, we may have to talk about tax dollars being money that's accorded to our government for services. And so I applaud Al Turner and his efforts to get a union in there, I'll tell you. Yeah, he's very brave, he's very courageous, he's articulate, he's a fighter, and most importantly, he's championing having a voice, a legal voice, in his institution, and I think that's wonderful.
Absolutely. A friend of mine a long time ago told me, when you're organizing, and you're an organizer, okay, whether or not you get that title, whether or not you get paid to do that, you're organizing your community. You're doing God's work. You really are. Yes. Because you're working on improving your community, your family's life, their lives, my hat's off to you, man.
Thank you.
And if there's anything we could do, don't hesitate. Next time they tell you that. You got to park in their lot, but pay for it too, we could have some fun with that.
and the thing about the wages is that there's employees at UPMC that are on public welfare.
Right.
And going to food banks to trying to make ends meet.
Al, I gotta tell you this. There are people at UPMC that don't have health care coverage.
Yeah.
How the hell does that happen?
They can't afford it.
Right. It's a hospital.
Yeah.
What, you can't set up a clinic for the employees? Really? Just saying. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
I'm Mark Belanger from Radio Labor, reporting for The Union Edge.
Today is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. Labor organizations around the world are using the day to build greater awareness about violence against women in the workplace and what can be done about it. Rosa Pavanelli, the General Secretary of Public Services International, the PSI, told the media, "Violence against women at work is not merely the problem of the women who suffer, but of all of us. Violence against women is violence against society as a whole." Fred Van Leeuwen, the General Secretary of Education International, said, "Gender-based violence is a fundamental violation of human rights. It's one of the worst manifestations of gender-based discrimination and a major obstacle to achieving gender equality." Veronica Fernandez Mendez is the head of the Equal Opportunities Department of UNI, the Global Union Federation for Skills and Services.
Violence is a breach of women's human rights. We are talking about sexual assault, physical abuse, and verbal degradation. It is a global issue deeply rooted in the relation of power and inequality between women and men. We should keep it at the top of our agenda. We need to put all the resources needed to end this violence. What we notice is that violence against women, whether sexual, physical, mental, psychological, or economic, is a widespread phenomenon that affects millions of women. The lack of proper labor legislation exacerbates the vulnerability of women that are already at the margins of society.
The International Labor Organization, the ILO, is trying to get its member states to adopt a new convention about violence against women at work. A convention is a law which, if adopted, becomes part of a country's legislative infrastructure. Jane Hodges is with the ILO's Gender Bureau.
The International Labour Organization is very interested to see our membership, representatives of governments, labour and business, looking to a possible International Labour Convention and recommendation on violence against women and men at work. We're hearing from our membership, 185 member states across all regions, that violence at work is on the rise. It's not just sexual harassment or daily inconveniences. It's becoming a very, very serious occupational safety and health issue. It's costing employers bucks because there's not only absenteeism and sickness claims, broken ribs, the bashed eye, but machinery also in a factory setting or on plantations is being destroyed. We're seeing also an incredible cost in stress, work-related stress, and eventually, in fact, we're seeing legal costs and so forth down the road. So employers and workers have a reason to have a new International Labour Convention.
The International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women has been declared by the United Nations. The UN is encouraging people to recognize the day by displaying the color orange in their communities. Daniel Dickinson of UN Radio reports,
people around the world are being encouraged to display the colour orange in their communities to symbolise hope for a future free from violence against women and girls. The Orange Your Neighbourhood initiative is being launched by the UN to coincide with the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, which is marked annually on the 25th of November. Reet Gronen is from UN Women, the UN's gender-focused agency.
Violence against women is a very serious problem. It's a serious human rights violation. It's happening in every country in the world. It doesn't make a difference whether you're rich or poor, whether you're educated or not. It's really an experience which many, many women and girls unfortunately experience.
Violent acts against women are in most cases committed by an intimate partner. Of all women killed in 2012, almost half died at the hands of a partner or family member. The He for She campaign, launched earlier this year by UN Women, seeks to reverse that trend. Its aim is to engage men and boys as advocates of change for the achievement of gender equality and women's rights. The International Day kicks off 16 days of action against gender violence, which culminates on Human Rights Day on December the 10th.
And that's it. I'm C. Marie Ainsborough. Thank you for listening.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Cumin Lowndes. A two-year investigation by the Republican-led House Intelligence Committee that debunked several right-wing myths about the Benghazi attacks was largely ignored by the four major broadcast networks' Sunday shows. Only NBC's Meet the Press acknowledged the House Intelligence Committee's findings.
House Republican-led Intelligence Committee released a Benghazi report, and it basically, it's pretty exculpatory. The key findings, no intelligence failure prior to the attack. Security at CIA facilities were sufficient. Yes, security at State Department facilities were inadequate, and yes, some of the development of the talking points that Susan Rice used were flawed, but no wrongdoing, none of the conspiracies found. Is it time for Republicans to drop the Benghazi conspiracy theories?
On cable networks, however, CNN's State of the Union provided detailed coverage of the report. Substitute anchor Gloria Borger broke down the report's findings, saying,
"Its conclusions are simple. No conspiracy, no cover-up, and as for the political shenanigans, absolutely not."
For more on this and other stories, please visit BenghaziHoax.com.
You are part of the American workforce, the most productive people in the world. You deserve the best. You deserve a union.